David Icke with us as we talk about his work, Phantom Self. I've got lots more to talk with David about, but so do you. So we're going to open up the phone lines when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, David Icke with us. So, David, I'm looking at these numbers we're talking about with the Bush and Clinton. If Hillary were to get elected for 8 years, 28 out of 36 years, you'd either have a Bush or a Clinton in office. 28 out of 30. That's almost like a monarchy again.
Well, that's what it is. And it's very interesting you should bring up that point, because one of the things that I've been exposing, you know, for a long time, you know, decades, is the fact that there are particular bloodlines. And what I would say from a computer point of view, a biological computer point of view, is these bloodlines are actually like software programs. They are certain information constructs. And one of the things that these information constructs called elite bloodlines do not have is the ability to decode what we call empathy, the ability to put themselves in the feelings and in the consequences of what they cause others to experience. And so the most extreme of these software programs we call psychopaths. You look at the so-called hair test of a psychopath, and you'll see these elite bloodlines are to a T what the hair test says is the definition of a psychopath. And so when people say, when you expose what's going on, they would never do that. No, you would never do that. They would not only do it, but they would love it, because they have no emotional consequence whatsoever. Another thing about psychopaths is they tend to be pathological liars. And of course, that's what you're looking at with the major politicians, and a vast number that are not major, in the way that politics operates. It's not what is true, it's what they can persuade us is true, the perception deception. And these so-called elite bloodlines in the ancient world were called royal bloodlines. They were said to be the bloodlines of the gods, which has connotations too, in terms of the force that's actually behind this. And so you had the right to rule because of your bloodline. And this came down through history as the divine right to rule. The right to rule because of what? Your genetics. We have a lady about 2 hours from me in London called Queen Elizabeth II, who is only the head of state in Britain because of her genetics. She is the head of state and has been for a record amount of time, because someone had sex with someone else at a certain time. The someone else was another expression of the bloodline, therefore producing a child of the bloodline. And the when dictated that she was going to be queen before someone else came along later in the same family, in the order of succession. That's how ludicrous it all is. Now, what happened is when the people started rebelling against what was obvious in your face dictatorship by royal tyranny, then the bloodline had to start going undercover, because the people weren't having it anymore. One or two have stayed around, like Queen Elizabeth and all that stuff, but most of them, they went into what I call the dark suit professions. They went into politics, they went into banking, they went into corporations, and all the other institutions that run and control our society. And so when you talk about another royal family, you're actually speaking a very important truth. She may not be called a queen, or someone else may not be called a king, but in fact, they are expressions of the same bloodline. This is where we come back to what I was talking about at the start of our chat, about the perception deception, about the fact that your vote makes any difference. The vast majority of time it doesn't, because of this manipulation of the bloodline into positions of power. And it's you're quite right with your figures. It's so in your face now. And I think, you know, one of the reasons, there were others, that they threw Obama in for a couple of terms is because it was so becoming so blatantly obvious.
Yes.
It still, of course, is. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, events might not take a turn and she doesn't get in, but that's who they want. This is why people like George Soros are funding her.
Oh, that's right. Big dollars too, David.
Yeah, because it is another expression of this network. That's what, you know, this is another thing. People say, oh, that George Soros, he's a fantastic financier. He makes all that money. Well, if you know that a stock market's going to crash because you people you represent are going to crash it, you're going to get out before it crashes.
Right, or you sell it short.
The stock for cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
This is how it works.
Unbelievable. Let's take some calls here for you, David.
It's not, you know, talent.
We have Virginia in Jacksonville, Florida, to get things started for us. Hello, Virginia. Welcome to the program.
Another night of insomnia. Okay.
That's right.
You mentioned Morgellons disease and chemtrails. I'm just wondering, and I came across the word depopulation some time ago, and I'm very reluctant to even have a flu shot because I wonder if all this is connected.
Virginia, absolutely it is. And this is, you know, when I do the talks over 10 hours, I'm connecting dots all the time. And as the dots connect, the pixels become a picture, which is not can't be seen when you only see the dots. And so all these things are connected. For instance, a depopulation to a large extent is connected to transhumanism, because what's happening is robots and technology are taking over at a massive rate from human labor. So this network doesn't need so many people anymore. I mean, there's a company in China recently replaced 90% of its workforce with robots. We've seen nothing yet. And some people in the mainstream are starting to say, well, hold on a second, where is this leading? Well, it's leading to a thing called a smart grid. All this technology with smart in front of it. And you look at the definition of smart technology, and it's technology that is designed to communicate with other smart technology. They're building a smart grid, a technological sub-reality. So we have smart television, smart meters, smart cars, smart pills with chips in them, smart dust, smart patches, smart watches, smart skin, smart everything, smart streets, smart cities. And this is this technological nanotechnology sub-reality that I'm talking about. And so they need a fewer people. And the target, Virginia, is the human immune system. That's what it is. First of all, there's mutations going on through vaccines and through food and genetically modified food, which is designed to genetically modify us. There is a war on the human immune system, and that's coming through food, it's coming through stuff in the water, it's coming from radiation in the atmosphere, which has increased by millions of times in the last 50 years, technologically generated radiation. And the immune system, of course, is what keeps us well, what keeps us alive. And if you can undermine that with all this appalling stuff they bravely call food, then people are going to fall for things that they wouldn't normally fall for. And what's also part of this is that they are creating a synthetic world. Now, the definition of synthetic is basically something that imitates something that's natural. So this word synthetic is everywhere. They're creating synthetic drugs. Why not natural drugs? Why not from natural things? No, synthetic versions, imitations. And they're creating a synthetic human. This is, I'm absolutely convinced, is what that is a manifestation of Morgellons disease. It could well be, I have heard this suggested, and I certainly absolutely wouldn't dismiss it, that people with Morgellons disease are examples of people whose bodies are rejecting this stuff and not assimilating it, which is why they have the experiences that other people don't have. Anyway, they are also in a situation now through stem cells where you take a stem cell and you give it an instruction, and it can become any cell you want, including sperm. And so when you look at the books 1984, George Orwell, and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, you put those together, and you're looking at the world that that they want to create and is unfolding before our eyes now by the day. The reason was they weren't writing those books from purely imagination. They came from a knowledge of where this thing was supposed to go. And, of course, Huxley talks in Brave New World about humans no longer being created through parental procreation, but through world hatcheries in petri dishes and test tubes. And they have the ability now to create, or they're moving into, and of course, what is known and accepted in the public arena in terms of the cutting edge of possibility is always light years behind the underground bases and the secret projects. They are building the ability to create synthetic humans, imitations of humans. That's where this stuff is going, and to trap awareness in the body from which it can't escape.
Well done. Let's go to Portland, Oregon. Jason's turn on Coast to Coast. Jason, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Thank you. Sure. Hey, David, there's two books in my life that have influenced me the most. One is the Bible, and the second one was your book, The Truth Shall Set You Free. And as a Christian, I have a question about Robots Rebellion, by the way, your book, Robots Rebellion. But just real quick, as a Christian, I want to encourage other Christians that don't be afraid of David Icke. You know, he's got some truths. He's got a piece of the puzzle. And I consider you personally a prophet. And I'm so glad you're here on this earth right now for us, David. And my question is, in Robots Rebellion, I read the exact words that you wrote. It said, you will see in America lone gunmen walking into school and shooting children. And then I looked to see when this book was written. It was like 1994. How do you know these things? That's my question.
Okay. How do you see these things, David? How do you predict the future?
It's a very, very long story, and it goes back to 1991 when I had an extraordinary series of experiences. In fact, I'm coming up to 20 years, a 25-year anniversary of one of them.
Good for you.
Where basically my mind blew to pieces, for 3 months, if you'd have asked me my name and the planet I was on, I couldn't have told you. And
wow.
Then, after 3 months, it all morphed back into clarity. And people were saying, hey, Dave, you're the same person you used to be. They said, you've gone mad. And I did seem to be the person I was before, but I wasn't. I just saw the world in a completely different way. And what also followed was this extraordinary synchronicity where I would walk into information all the time. And not only was the information coming to me in this way, it was coming in an order that made it easiest to put the dots together. And so, I don't know, there's some force at work here. And I think, you know, this is not, you know, David Icke come to save the world. It is a level of awareness which anybody can tap into. And people, for instance, you look at people like Leonardo da Vinci and other people like Giordano Bruno,
mm-hmm.
who were light years, what they say is light years ahead of their time.
Yes.
But they weren't. They were beyond time. They were beyond the program. They were able to expand their awareness to connect with higher levels of awareness, which allowed them to see this world in a completely different way. And so what's happened is basically the puzzle pieces have come to me in an incredibly synchronistic way. And this is another thing about so-called prophecy. If you can uncover the agenda, where this network wants the world to go, and nothing intervenes to stop it, then predicting the future becomes a piece of cake. Because if nothing stops it, it's going to happen. And of course, what they want in America, you know, I don't own guns. You know, I've never owned a gun. I want anything to do with guns. But if we are going to be mature about this, we should not get caught in the debate, which is fair to have, but a diversity debate from the real debate, I would suggest, and get caught in the debate or guns or no guns. We need to ask this: why is there such a clear campaign to take guns away from the American public, while at the same time the police and the law enforcement in general are being armed like the military? There's something to know about that question. And it is, of course, that the planned eventual physical takeover of the United States is going to be much easier if you have an unarmed population. And so, you know, like I said earlier, this is a really key thing for people to keep in their minds all the time. These people that are behind this have no capacity for empathy. For us to mind controlling someone to go into a situation and start blowing children away, or to use one of those as a patsy while military people covered in black and masks go in and do it, and it's said the other guy did it. The idea that someone would sit down and orchestrate that just to get the end they want, which is demonizing guns so the public accept them being taken away for reasons I've explained, that would be inconceivable to us, because we would put ourselves immediately through empathy in the situation of those children, of their parents, and all that would follow in terms of lifelong emotional trauma. But they don't have the ability to do that. So to them, it's matter of fact. Well, their attitude is, well, it gets what we want, doesn't it? So let's do it. Who cares? I don't. And it's the understanding that these bloodlines and their offshoots don't see reality, life, and people as we do. Thus, what they're capable of is beyond anything that we would be capable of, because empathy would step in and say, hold on, no further.
How much time do you think, David, we have before they really try to implement things?
Well, they're doing it through something I call the totalitarian tiptoe. You start at A and you know you're going to Z, but if you go too quickly, then people start to see a pattern. So you go from A to B, you may go to D to E, and each of these steps is promoted in the public arena as unconnected to the other steps. It's like the European Union. We were told right at the start that we were going into a free trade area, just a free trade area, good for jobs. But what's happened is, step by step, more and more power has been taken to the center, so that the free trade area has now, all these years later, become a centralized bureaucratic dictatorship. And the same is happening in all these areas, whether it's gun control, whether it's finance, whatever it is. And so it's happening in front of our eyes. Eventually what they want is just to bring in this new system, what has come under the name through the years as the New World Order, completely centralized global system.
Hold on, David. Final segment just ahead on Coast to Coast AM, and final calls too. On our next Coast to Coast program, we'll have Kelly Sullivan Walden join us for the first hour to talk about dreams. That'll be fun. And then investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with an incredible story of that 1941 Cape Girardeau, Missouri crash of something. Welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you with David Icke. This is our final segment with your calls. And David, before we go to the calls, tell us again about your worldwide wake-up tour. It begins. You're going all over the planet, aren't you?
Yeah, what I'm doing, I'm starting in London in June, and the tickets for that are already gone. You know, we were talking earlier about this wake-up. It's real. It's real. It's not some, you know, hopeful, I'll convince myself it's happening because I'll feel better. It's happening. And then I'm going in July all across Australia and to New Zealand, and then into the United States in September to New York, to Los Angeles and San Francisco, and then all over Europe. And then after Christmas, I'm going to continue it in Britain, and then back to many other places, and very much hoping that I can get to Canada and speak in places like Vancouver and Toronto, although I've been kept out of there for a long time now.
Really?
It must have been something I said. Yes, it's been very difficult. We just applied for a visa to get into Canada in 2017 to speak. I've been into Canada one or two times for other things, not talks. And every single time, I'm stopped.
You get stopped at customs?
All the time, and Australia. And what was happening during the months before Christmas is that we made an application for a visa for me to speak in Australia. And normally, I mean, my son who's coming with me, his came through in like 2 minutes, literally online. And mine came back, said it's basically got to be considered by the government. In fact, they turned the first one down.
Jeez.
And then we started a campaign online about it, and it was months and months. And funnily enough, talk about synchronicity, the very day before we said, well, we're going to have to pull the Australian part of the tour because we haven't got enough run-up time, that's when the visa came through, months and months, months later. So, but Canada's even more difficult. These are really, really controlled countries. They don't want this stuff out there. So being optimistic, change of prime minister, not that tends to make much difference. Maybe I'll get in this time. But when you think about it, George, here we have a country in Canada that prides itself, at least in its self-image, of being a free country, just like the United States and Britain. But someone is stopped from going in and presenting information that very large numbers of people would like to hear. I mean, that is not freedom. That is not an open, free country. That's the tyranny. And this is what's happening all over the world. And it's happening in social media. It's happening with Facebook. It's happening with Google. It's happening with YouTube. There's a simple kind of double whammy, if you like. On one side, you have the agenda to program people with a false reality, i.e. you control the sources of mainstream information from which people largely get their information, from which they form their perceptions. Now, that's one side of it. But for that to prevail, you have to block other four sources of information that are putting another version of perception and possibility in front of people. And as this has moved on, we're seeing more and more suppression and censorship on Facebook, in Google, in terms of listings, in terms of what YouTube will get involved in terms of the alternative media, and so on and so forth. We're seeing now, particularly in America, but it's happening here too, this theme of domestic terrorists. And domestic terrorists who have been described by law authorities recently in America as as bigger, if not a bigger threat than the other kind of terrorists. This is all about painting people who are challenging the government, who are questioning the government, who are questioning the state as some form of terrorists. And all this anti-terrorism legislation, that including the Patriot Act, etc., which was to stop terrorism, actually it was written on purpose in such a wide range of interpretation that it can be applied to people who are questioning the government. We've had child protection organization, government child protection organization in Britain recently, telling teachers to watch for children who question if they should believe the mainstream media, who question what the government tells them, because they are quite possible signs of developing terrorists,
unbelievable,
being radicalized, This is where we're going with this. And
paranoia.
We need to stand up to to this censorship. There's a funny thing happened to me the other day. I went onto Facebook, where I put a lot of stuff out every day, and there was a sign on it. I couldn't get onto it. There was a sign on it which said your page has got more than 700,000 likes, and yet it said your page is being unpublished for continuously breaching the rules of Facebook, which means posting things that the people that control Facebook don't want.
Don't like, that's right.
Anyway, what the funny thing was, George, again, a bit of synchronicity, I couldn't get in on my codes, someone else couldn't get in on their codes, but one other person who has access to the site, amazingly, we could get in. So I posted on Facebook what was happening. It went around social media to a lot of people. Woke up the next morning, page is back, all the codes are back, and we've been left alone ever since. You just have to stand up to this stuff and not be trampled over, because if we are, they'll take everything away.
Yeah, they sure will. Let's go to final calls now. We will go to Tony in Yonkers, New York. First-time caller. Tony, go ahead.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, am I live here?
Go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Reich, I read a few of your books, and I agree with you, and there's a lot of things being said there, and I just wanted to ask about your perception of the Peru event, where you had your hands out, and something was speaking to you through your mind. What that force could be, is it the ultimate truth, do you think, or could it be part of the actual deception that you're speaking of?
Well, very quickly, I mean, I kind of alluded to it a little while ago when George asked me a question. What happened was that throughout 1989, when I was a mainstream presenter for the BBC and a national spokesman for the British Green Party, and I'd never been into any of this stuff at all, I got the feeling throughout the year that when I was in a room alone, I wasn't alone. And this got more and more powerful until in the March of 1990, I was, it's a long story, but I picked up a book and I turned it over, and it was by a psychic called Betty Schein. And I'd never been to a psychic before, didn't know anything about it really. But because of this presence, I was feeling so tangibly around me by then, whenever I was alone, I went to see her. I didn't tell her anything, didn't say anything was happening to me. I said, you know, I just want to come and see you, all that stuff. Help me with my arthritis, maybe. In the first two times I went, we just had a chat, nothing happened. Second, third and fourth times, amazing thing happened. I was sitting on a bench, medical type bench, and she was working on my knee, hands-on healing and all that, which is just an exchange of energy, of course. And I felt like a spider's web on my face. And what struck me was that in her book, she said that when other levels of reality are trying to lock into you, it sometimes feels like a spider's web on your face. So my backside is starting to slip down the bench thinking, what's going on? Now, of course, I had no idea in those days, but what I realize now is that feeling was an electromagnetic field. And without saying anything to this lady, 10 to 15 seconds later, she launches her head back and said, my God, this is powerful. I've got to close my eyes for this one. At which point she said she was being told that I was going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets and all the things that I've done since. And after I had that experience, that's when my life completely changed. The BBC didn't renew my contract, so I was suddenly free to go with this. And then about, I don't know, 6-9 months later, another series of synchronistic happenings, I ended up in Peru. And I ended up on a hill next to a place called Siustani, an old Inca site, in fact, before Inca. And I walked up on this hill, again, a long story of synchronicity to get there. And it was a piercing hot Peruvian day with literally not a cloud in the sky. And as I stood there just looking at the wonderful view, I started to get this energy going into the top of my head, like almost like a drill. And then I started feeling it coming the other way. And Then my arms went out at 45 degrees without me deciding to do it. And what passed through my mind, it wasn't so much a voice, it was a very strong thought form, which didn't come from me. And it said, it will be over when you feel the rain, which I stood there thinking, that is absolutely ludicrous in the situation I'm in with the weather and the sun and the cloud, the sky. And then over a period of maybe 45 minutes, the energy got more and more and more powerful. Until I was literally shaking like I was plugged in the mains. And I kept going into non-conscious state where I was not aware of my environment, and then back to being aware that where I was and what was happening. And in one of the times I came back, I noticed that there was a dark gray cloud over the distant mountains, and it got darker and darker. I realized it's pouring with rain over the distant mountains. And in a ridiculously short time, this rainstorm came out of the mountains. And it sounds, you know, if you did this in a movie, they'd say, well, that's far-fetched, but it happened. This rain came towards me, and it was in a straight line, stair-rod rain. I've described it in the past as like a curtain being pulled across the sky, coming towards me. And I'm watching this come towards me. It's just straight out of a movie. And I'm shaking now, hardly able to stand. And when the rain hit me, the energy stopped. And I staggered forward. I could hardly stand. I was like Bambi. And that was the precursor to what I was telling George earlier about those 3 months when I didn't know what day it was, where I was, what planet I was on. And then it morphed back into clarity, and I could see the world in a completely different way. And what I've done since to this moment was started with that experience. Now, people need to look at what I've done since and say, well, has it been positive or not? To answer your question. But this is where it all started for me, and this is why 26 years later I'm still going, and what I was told was happen is happening. And so I'm very, very comfortable with where I've been and where I'm going.
Let's go to Marsha now, David, west of the Rockies in Los Gatos, California. Hi, Marsha, go ahead.
Hello, it's so nice to be able to talk with you. We love you both.
Thank you.
You know, something new is interfacing with our psyche, you know, some like new subtle influence affecting our behavior. And it's maybe possibly by the Wi-Fi or what I call the field of this frequency pollution all around us. But my question is, if you or the audience especially has experienced this phenomenon of waking up and being in the room that you fell asleep in, but waking up, but in front of you is like a stage drop veil with like pictures, like puzzle pieces. You can see through this veil, but it's like still there. Not the dream you were having, but another picture overlaid your reality. It doesn't last long. And I'm so wondering if the audience could call in the coming weeks because of the new open lines and tell us if they've experienced this. It's almost as if it's a glitch in the computer.
Yeah.
Or something. It's outside of you. But it's real, tangible, and you can see through it. And I'm wondering if they're able to influence us through during our sleep, through this field, this Wi-Fi, this what I call frequency pollution. And remember, don't sleep with your cell phone next to the head of your bed.
That's right. You got that right. David, you want to react to some of that?
I could talk for an hour about some of that.
And we've only got 2 minutes left.
I know. I've just looked at the clock. The thing is that this technological sub-reality that I talked about earlier, Wi-Fi is crucial to it. The Wi-Fi fields are overlaying, is the word that Marsha used, are overlaying our greater reality and creating this sub-reality, what Kurzweil calls the cloud. And, of course, if they are going to create a global sub-reality based on the Wi-Fi fields, then they have to have Wi-Fi everywhere. And that's why people like Google and Facebook and these other companies connected to them, corporations, are in the process of putting up satellites in low altitudes and other forms of technology to give to bathe the entire planet, wherever you are, in the Wi-Fi fields. That is the cloud that Kurzweil was talking about. But something that I was told about in the earliest days, just after these experiences that I've just described, was something that I call the truth vibrations. My first book was actually called Truth Vibrations back in 1991. And what I was told was that there is a vibrational change coming that is going to wake up humanity from its slumber, in other words, from its program. The people that were the least in the program would be influenced first, but eventually people who were really in the program were going to be awakened by this vibrational information change that was coming. And when you heard that, and I heard that in 1990, I was like, where's the evidence? Look at the evidence now, 25, 6 years later. As people are beginning to look at the world in a completely different way, in numbers that you've never seen before. I'm very optimistic. You know, when I do the talks and Phantom Self, it's not doom and gloom. It's revealing information we need to know about, but it's very, very optimistic because we have the power. We are infinite awareness when we dispense with a self-identity with Phantom Self.
David, good luck, and hope to see you in Los Angeles when you're out this way. Good luck with that tour. David Icke, his latest book is called Phantom Self. For Dan Galani, Juan Velasquez, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.